400 years ago this month, the first Africans arrived on slave ships in the British colonies of North America. In late August 1619, about 20 people captured in present-day Angola were brought to a port in Virginia called Point Comfort and sold into slavery. The site later became home to Fort Monroe and a Union-held refuge for slaves during the Civil War. President Obama declared it a national monument in 2011.
This is going to give an opportunity for people from all across the country to travel to Fort Monroe and trace the history that has been so important to making America what it is.
The National Park Service has planned a series of events this weekend to mark the occasion, and Agena Quezon Rogers will be there. She's a National Park Ranger with a personal connection to the fort's history. Agena, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And first, tell me about this place. Fort Monroe is not only where the slave trade began in what is now the United States, but it's also where slavery started its decline.
That's correct. In May of 1861, General Butler was there, and three enslaved men had escaped from working for the Confederacy, and he made a decision that since they were considered property by the Confederate owners there, they were contraband. And therefore, they were considered property that could be seized. But they were starting to experience a type of freedom. And my family, many of them, on my mom's side, the Fields family, eventually followed in the footsteps of these men and these other people who had been enslaved and came to Fort Monroe seeking freedom.
So that was at the dawn of the Civil War, and I want to hear a lot more about your ancestor, James Apostle Fields. But let's take a step back and go to 1619, the earliest days of slavery. Tell me more about that time and the people who suffered under slavery then.
Mm-hmm. Well, those who arrived first in Virginia came after having been seized from Africa and brought over. You can imagine how difficult that was. And also to have your name taken away and your freedom taken away. And eventually in Virginia, it becomes something that's passed down from generation to generation. But what is so beautiful about the stories that we tell or the way we look at these times now is that you also bring out the resilience of a people who were able, in spite of all the repression and oppression that was put upon them, they were able to continue to create families and bring the culture that had been remembered from various places that they came from in Africa. And that becomes incorporated into this American nation. So when we look at 1619, we look at it as the beginning of various cultures, the European culture, the African culture, and the Native American culture coming together to create the American culture we have today.
Well, speaking of resilience, your great-great-grandfather, James Apostle Fields, who spent time at Fort Monroe, had just an absolutely remarkable life. What can you tell me about him?
He certainly did. James Apostle Fields was my great-great-grandfather. And at the age of 17, he escaped slavery. He had been born in Hanover County.
In Virginia.
Hanover County, Virginia. In fact, I live about 5 miles today from where he had been enslaved. When I first moved back to Virginia, I took my little daughter to the Hanover courthouse and stood there and just thought, wow, how 150 years later I could be there proudly and come on my own to be where he had been enslaved.
Wow.
But what had happened is that he had a very cruel master who beat him severely. And that at that point, he decided to take his freedom. And through the network of people in the area, he was able to escape and live free for about 6 months. But then he was captured again. However, on the way back to Hanover, he took his freedom one more time ran through rebel lines and ended up with the Union Army in the Union camp. And with that, he served as a scout until 1864, when he makes his way to Fort Monroe, where his mother, Martha Ann Fields, and his brothers and sisters had also escaped to their freedom.
He later becomes part of the first graduating class at Hampton University. He was elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. How do you think he was able to overcome so many hurdles in the 1860s and the 1880s? How did he do that?
He was just determined, and he had a strong mother who encouraged all of her children to strive to do the one thing that could help them get to a higher level, and that was to get an education. That's why he was in the first class of Hampton. That is why he worked in the House of Delegates as the doorkeeper. And eventually, because he had been exposed to what lawyers were doing and saw that, he himself went off to Howard University and got his law degree. Hmm. He even serves for 8 years as a Commonwealth's attorney in Warwick County, serves in the House of Delegates, was one of the last African Americans to serve in the House of Delegates until the 1960s.
Because during Reconstruction, right after the Civil War, black men were commonly elected to public office, and then the era of Jim Crow comes, and there wouldn't be another black man serving in the House of Delegates for 75 years.
Yes,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and so that story was passed down to us to help us as Fields' descendants to remember that education was a way to keep on pushing forward, and we were always encouraged to do our best. And so my son, Joseph Rogers, will be portraying James Fields this weekend at the program for the Hampton 400.
So now this country is 400 years removed from the first slave ships arriving here. How are you reflecting upon that milestone right now? What's on your mind?
What's on my mind now with this commemoration is that this has been a journey for all who are living here in the United States. It's time for us to reflect on that journey and how it affects us so that we can understand where each person is coming from. If you look at the individual stories, that's when you find the humanity. When you start generalizing or dehumanizing someone, you can easily put them in a box and say their story doesn't matter. But when we start coming face to face and sharing our individual stories, that's when we can really make this country what it should be and what it has always strived to be.
But four centuries later, here we are still witnessing violence against people of color. Just look at the massacre in El Paso a few weeks ago, targeting Latino people. There was the deadly protest in Charlottesville, Virginia, not far from where you are.
Not far from where we are.
Why is that legacy still so deeply ingrained into our society even today?
The legacy of slavery and segregation is deeply ingrained even today because of how you experience life. You only know what you know. And until you are exposed to a different set of people, you won't know what their story is. Someone looks at the color of your skin and thinks that you are those stereotypes that were perpetuated, particularly, for example, during Jim Crow segregation. And Jim Crow, that blacks were shuffling, lazy, ignorant. If that's the only thing that you've been exposed to, that's what you're going to react to. So that's why it's deeply ingrained. There's a fear of the other that we have to work through. And you need to make sure that people know the struggles that have come before.
Well, Agena Quezon Rogers, thank you for exposing us to your family's story. Your great-great-grandfather sought refuge from slavery during the Civil War at Fort Monroe, the same place where slavery began in the colony of Virginia 400 years ago this month. Agena, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.